that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Colin Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find a flick that monster boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Yakmala, Yakmala, welcome back, my friends, to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Oh, it is so good to be back. I am your host. I am 8th Dan Stanadu, the Boogaloo Dream. And I am happy to be joined. I got Nick the Bruiser Boxer.
Somebody owes me some goddamn fucking alcohol for this one. Oh my god.
Oh, you haven't. We haven't even explained what the movie is yet. Okay, join in the Bruiser. We got James the Butcher Kata.
The devil can't help you, Stan. Devil can't help you.
But I'll chase him down anyways. And finally, we got Jack Bobo Hall.
I'm sorry, who? Bobo?
Bobo, yeah.
Bobo.
Welcome to the show, Bobo.
Can't top that. I'm hoping that's permanent.
That's right. I don't know how many nicknames I can keep adding on, but you know, let's keep going here. All right. Well, this is season 9, If You Show Me Yours, and our first movie is the not really wrestling documentary I Like to Hurt People by Donald G. Jackson. And this was something else that we, like unto something that we have never ever seen before. Certainly not me.
So, we'll never see again.
And I'm really kind of happy about that. but now the best part is that the Bruiser, Nick the Bruiser's gotta start talking about it. Tell us the story of this one, Nick.
Well, if you like badly over-modulated music over questionable footage of wrestling, this is the movie for you. As for a plot, there isn't one. They cut to random wrestlers. No wrestlers that you'd really want to hear from, and interview them and get them to say the phrase, "I like to hurt people," somewhere in their interview. There is sort of a subplot there that involves the noble sheik as a bad guy wrestler and a protest movement against him. But that plot goes absolutely nowhere, despite a significant amount of the runtime of the movie. My theory is somebody found some footage in a locker, sold it to somebody else, saying you could make a movie of this, and they just invested way too much to not release it as something. This is trash. I did not enjoy this.
You're not far off at all. you're really not. So in the 1970s, they agreed big time wrestling out of Detroit. They decided to film using a bunch of people in their cast, a horror movie. And so they started filming this horror movie, and very, very early into the production, and some of those scenes got into the film, of course. Those are the scenes where there's a plot that have nothing to do with the other plot that he mentioned.
What other plot? I mean, I mentioned the Sheik thing.
Yeah, there's the Sheik thing.
What's the plot you're talking of? Because I didn't get one.
It's the horror movie plot, but they are so early in that we don't even really get a plot. We just get some scenes from it, honestly. So basically, they realize they can't pull off the horror movie. So they just start filming this documentary, but they only get about 60 minutes. So they, about 60, 65, 70 minutes, somewhere in that range, but not quite enough for them to release the movie. And they don't know what to do with it. And 10 years later, Donald G. Jackson, the legendary, a true legend in B movies, gets this footage and films these new sequences that you're talking about, where they are trying to, it's a group of people, protesters, trying to stop the Sheik because he's too violent. So they're going around and they shoot these things in, and then they intersperse it with this other film, which has some scenes that are movie, some scenes that are documentary, and then these scenes trying to create some story, failing to hold it throughout, to create some sort of narrative. And it's a truly crazy, like, there is nothing like it. There really is.
Why wouldn't they come up with some sort of ending for that subplot, though?
Well, they did. There's an end. The guy who's protesting is grabbed by the Sheik and pulled into the locker room to get beat up.
Yeah.
And that would have been a new scene. And there was a couple new scenes like that in there. And the Sheik was still around. And probably, I think, about 84 when this thing was filmed. But the original footage is from about 1972, 1973. You know, because Dusty Rhodes mentions he's 28, I believe. So
I like the amount of screen time that went to people getting snacks at the snack bar and talking about, like, who their favorite wrestlers were. Like, I think if you're going to do Phil, that's quality Phil.
That is quality Phil. And there is no question that there is a lot of Phil in this thing.
Why is there ever?
It is so weird to have a movie that has a scene which is clearly an acted scene, and then a scene which is clearly a scene that is a documentary style scene, then a scene that is clearly an acted scene that was that where people are interacting with people from 12 years earlier. Like, it's a crazy piece of boogaloo. Maybe not the most enjoyable boogaloo, but there's no question that it's boogaloo.
It was fun for me to see, like, the old style wrestlers, like the pre-steroid, the pre-bodybuilder era wrestlers. Like, they're just big guys. Like, a lot of them are, like, kind of chubby guys too. they're definitely not the muscle heads that, you know, came around in the 80s.
And then there is a few stars in this, obviously. The Funk Brothers, Dusty Rhodes, we mentioned, he's not in it very much. Bobo Brazil, who also not in it very much.
I was actually just referring to the interview scenes where they actually were talking to the wrestlers.
The Funks are the biggest stars of people that they got in the documentary style scenes that they're talking to. And they're two legendary figures from a legendary family. But yeah, some of these other people you never even heard of, you know, like that girl. There's an entire one. So that's the thing, is that there is another plot, but the other plot is actually scenes that I think were going on in the territory at the time that they're making this. Yeah. So it's rustling storylines, but those aren't fully fleshed out either. Nothing gets fully fleshed out. But Donald G. Jackson, but it is Donald G. Jackson. It is his second movie, first one in the 80s. And then he went on to do Hell Comes to Dog, Frogtown, and numerous other things. And it launched his career.
It is interesting. Like, it's like you've got a random episode of a wrestling show, because there's the feuds that are going on. There's the smack talk. There's that whole, that's one of the most interesting parts of it for me, was like that where it becomes a full on documentary about the champion woman wrestler to wrestle the man.
Yeah. Heather Feather. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who I never heard of, but that storyline definitely ahead of its time. Cause yeah. I'm not sure if that was a storyline though, from the 80s that they did for this or storyline from the 70s.
Find it interesting that this would be the film. If I was interested in getting wrestling boycotted coming to my town, this is the film I'd show.
it is that like, it's because also
they're so into the wrestling is violence. Violence, oh yeah, is good thing.
And it's low rent, and it's in like a community center, and it's just a very, very different look all around from
there's no sports entertainment they're selling here. This is violence incarnate.
Well, and again, we're talking about, that's the territory. That's what the Sheik was. Like the Sheik was, and he was, and you could see they were drawing big crowds, but it was garbage wrestling in the 70s. It was not the most respected territory, the biggest territory. It was garbage wrestling. That's why you had him and Abdullah the Butcher, another guy who was in it for a second. That's what it was. He was one of the founders of that style. That's why he's a legend.
Actually, the Iron Sheik, they never referred
to him. No, no, no. The Iron Sheik came about after. The Sheik was there before the Iron Sheik. And, the Iron Sheik is a completely different person.
Yeah, and at one point they talked to the Sheik's wife, Joyce Farhat, in the
yes, they
in
do.
The
Joyce Farhat. Yeah, she
Did
talks about.
Did anyone else read that
what?
Every time her name was on the screen as Farhat?
Nope.
I love the Smack Talk was such a neat, it's an early form of that like soap opera-y wrestling. But then there's that weird debate between the Weasel and the Brain that goes on for like, who are the managers, and it goes on for like 4.5 hours.
Yeah, that's right at the end. And it's great. Like if you were watching that at the end as part of a long-term weekly wrestling show, it would totally fit in. In the movie, you're just like, what is going on? All of a sudden, this guy's manager, and then he's not. You don't know. And it's, as a wrestling promo, it's a great thing. As a part of a movie, it's just odd.
Because they just don't really care about anything. And it just really seems like they just took footage, hacked it together with other footage, without really even caring for story. I mean, even the matches that they were hacking together, it's like, you as an editor, you would not normally edit something like that. You would try to find like, oh, okay, it's an obvious jump cut, but instead they're doing like obvious jump cuts where you would not do a jump cut.
Early on, you get the scene where Dusty Rhodes confronts the manager character. He cuts an in-ring promo. It's actually a very famous promo, but we get it off camera, so you can barely understand him and barely hear him. And then it goes to him backstage assaulting on the stairs this manager. And then you have another scene where it's clearly actors and it's from the horror movie and they're talking about Andre the Giant. And then all of a sudden it's a documentary. There is nothing at all. No reason why it just changed. I'll give a little, by the way, Heather Feather, I can see here at the Cage Match database, started in 1972, so probably is from the 70s, early 70s. So it is kind of interesting that they had that going on at the time. But I was 13, and I was into the WWF at the time, right? WrestleMania, Hulk Hogan, and me and my friends, and it was a birthday party, and we rented this. And we got back, and we started watching, and we're going, oh my God. And probably 15, 20 minutes in, we're like eating cake, we're playing board games, we're play wrestling ourselves, we're doing anything but paying attention to this movie. But every now and then you'd look off in the corner, and even at my 13-year-old self, I would go, this is Boogaloo, clearly. There's something schlocky here, but I could not handle it, which is why I thought it would be interesting to revisit.
Now, I found this on YouTube. But you actually own a DVD. Now, how's the lawsuit against the releasers of this movie coming along?
What are you talking about?
Well, I just assume you're suing somebody for selling you this DVD.
Well, the DVD was the only way we could watch it. It was not available on YouTube. Oh. It was not available on television. It's now available on YouTube at the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo everywhere except for apparently Europe. Isn't that right, Jim?
Eastern Europe has blocked it, so watch while you can.
Yeah, everybody else, nobody really owns the rights.
I'll give you a list of the countries you can't watch it in, and just plan your travel accordingly.
Well, exactly. As of 2003, Brian Greenberg obtained the rights to the to it and was trying to put together all the uncut footage and put it into the movie.
Yeah, and I do remember that. And it has something to do with trying to reestablish the horror movie section.
Get this bad boy up to 95 minutes.
Yeah, Ringside in Hell.
Yeah, Ringside in Hell. That was the name of it. Yeah, that's right. There's an article on Canoe, I believe, that has something about that.
That's right. That's right. Yep.
Yeah. Like, it's just such an odd thing. And like, I didn't know how it would play. I didn't know how I would think it. Obviously, I clearly enjoyed it more than Nick. But
I got the sense Nick didn't care for it.
I get that sense.
We try not to telegraph that stuff too much.
But I don't know if he was looking at it through the proper Boogaloo lens. Because it is a hell of a Boogaloo movie. But it is not like...
See, you're being way too generous calling it a movie.
Well, that's true, actually. You know, yeah, that's part of what makes it a Boogaloo movie. Yeah. It's not really a movie.
It's
nothing.
It's really, I found it really difficult just because it is so extraordinarily disjointed. So the thing is that I can actually see both sides of the coin. It's like, I would never, ever want to watch it again, ever. But at the same time, it's this incredibly weird thing to have seen once. So it's going to be very interesting when we get to the scoring to see how it kind of plays out.
Do you guys think the music, the bad rock music that is over every wrestling scene in this, was made for the movie?
Oh yes.
Or was it married to the footage?
No. It was made for the movie.
It had to be.
It was Donald G. Jackson, got that. There was only two people that made all like eight songs or whatever. Because it's really very little rustling, like, in the thing. And when there is, it's just like one camera off the side that's kind of looking up at a ring and parts of a match or whatever. But yeah, it's some crazy. The I Like to Hurt People song is great. It's just so Boogaloo. But my favorite is They Call Me Mr. Cool Shoes. I thought that was amazing. And one of the WTF awesome moments of my life. It was such a bad song.
I'm ready to go to scoring.
Yeah. I don't have anything to add about this.
It's so weird.
It's got wrestling. It's got interviews. It's got bits of like poorly acted bits that were from a horror movie. Yeah, that's.
And the bits that they filmed to put in the could the acting have been worse?
No.
No. Bits that the Iron Sheik, the part where the guy's supposed to pretend that he sees the Andre the Giant.
Oh my lord.
Again, it's on YouTube under Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Go watch it.
And the guy that led the STS Stop the Sheik movement. Oh well, my lord! Like,
yeah,
every was time he shows back. Up, yeah.
Actually assumed they just told them they were shooting wrestling promos or something for that stuff.
I don't know.
I did not believe they actually thought they were in a movie.
Oh, yeah. They did. It's yeah. We wanted to create a movie. So let's make a movie.
This did everything that this season's supposed to be. You have taken something and brought it to the crowd.
That's right.
We have reacted as we've reacted.
We have not seen it before, and it was totally fresh. So,
it's certainly nothing like we've come across on this podcast before. That's for damn sure.
Definitely not. A class of its own.
Yes. Okay, let's go to scoring then.
Yeah. All right. Welcome back. If you're joining us already in progress, in our search for the ultimate B movie, we rate each film in five categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category is called Schlock Appeal, and welcome back. We start with Stan.
Oh, shit. There's a lot. There's schlock here, and there's also crap. And I'm going to go with a 5 because I can't decide if it's schlocky or if it's crappy, and I think it's both.
Nick here, and you know what? I'm going to give this a 2. I believe the title deserves some schlock appeal. Unfortunately, you can't even show a trailer of this sucker without people, making people not want to watch it.
Well, I can definitely disagree with that based on the fact that I showed this trailer to five different people and have had five different people say, "You're going to order the DVD. I got to see it." So I absolutely know that that's not true.
I believe you were asking predisposed wrestling fans.
Three were and two weren't. One of them just went, "It has a little person. I got to see it."
So, Sky Low's in this.
And somebody else that they I don't know that they, because this interview, it's like an interview section while you're watching him wrestle. where you just hear his voice over answering a bunch of questions. So like I was not sure about it at the beginning because it was just so strange. But as I'm watching it, something about it, there was something about it that I just found charming, just because it is so different. So I'll give it a 7.
I think I was, this is a category that I always think of, how do I explain this to someone? How do I tell them what I watched? And this is one of the ones that, like, wow, that you could actually unpack a little further than, you know, it's a cyborg who's sort of a cop. So I'm going to go up to a 7 on this too. I think that the 70s wrestling boosts up a lot of that. More heart than budget. Do we have a budget number on this?
I think $1.75.
Did it make it to triple digits?
Yeah, it's super cheap. Like I can't, that's the thing is, because it is footage from their show mixed in with footage from a movie, mixed in with what they decided to turn into a documentary, mixed in with new stuff. clearly you heard the music. They didn't spend much money on that.
No.
So I don't know the exact budget number, but it's clearly done on the damn cheap.
Yeah, it's very obvious that it's cheap, and I applaud them for attempting to take so many disparate elements and put them together. They failed epically in making it cohesive in any way, shape, or form, but you could tell they were trying. So for me, I'm going to give it a 5.
Holy fuck, you guys are way too kind. I realize this had a low budget, so the bar isn't all that high. But this had no heart whatsoever. Nobody, I don't think most of the people in this movie knew they were in a movie.
Yes, sir.
I think they thought they were in several different movies.
Some of them thought they were on the TV show. Some were thought they were a movie. Yeah, but they definitely.
One guy just sort of got over his head and just kept piling on shit, trying to get himself out. And it doesn't work.
What are you talking
about? And I don't think he wanted to finish it by halfway through, but he was committed. No.
Oh, Donald D. Jackson? Is that what you're talking about?
I don't know whoever.
I don't think Nick knows what's going on.
We can't even nail that down.
Oh, the original person who made it. Well, we could, but I don't have it with me at the moment. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm throwing a 1 out there. I don't think if somebody had a good night's sleep before they started making this, I wouldn't have been subjected to this movie.
I totally disagree. I give it an 8. I think the thing that gives it a lot of heart to me was partially just the fact that they worked so hard clearly to pull all this together. But the other thing that gives it a heart to me is the earnestness, because they have interviews with the wrestlers, and some of those are fairly earnest. But more so,
those were for wrestling, not for.
No, they had some of those were documentary, and they didn't do that type of documentary in wrestling back in the day. I get that kind of inside look. But the other one, there's the fans. Occasionally they would talk to fans, and the fans would express their passion and why it is that they enjoy wrestling so much. And their earnestness and their passion, for me, is where I think this movie gets almost all of its heart.
Those interviews did sort of read like a Ku Klux Klan membership drive.
Nice. Nice. Thank you, Nick. Nick is truly the heel commentator of this.
That is pretty much, that's a good.
It's a heel turn, yeah.
Jack, all right, Jack, you got to keep being the baby face, I guess. So.
Well, I'm finished. I mean, I gave it my 8. And
I 6 is what I'm going to end at. Just because. What the fuck moments?
Well, I think that for the most part, while the movie is loaded with moments where I sat there and said, okay, what the fuck is going on? I have also established within the first 5 minutes that all of the what the fuck moments would be exactly the same for the first 5 minutes to the next 5 minutes and the 5 minutes that followed. So I'm going to go with the 5.
Yeah, I'm going a little higher, not higher than Stan, but I'm going higher than any of my other scores on this. I'm going to give it 4 just for the black guy who spots Andre the Giant. I found him very entertaining.
That was a good moment. I like that.
That whole moment, like I say, that is a W because it's clearly part of a scripted movie. And then I think there's a lot for me. I think there's, I got a 7 on this. For me, the big one is they have this interview with this one guy at his home, like this rustler, and he's talking about how he likes to hurt people and how he's violent and this and that. And his family's there and his wife is there. And his daughter just comes up and basically she just starts mugging for the camera and doing all this super cute stuff, which is so out of place with everything else going on in the movie. And in that scene and the things he's trying to say, it's just like one of those surreal moments. I was laughing so hard watching her while he's trying to cut this serious promo, getting over his character.
See, the wife's face in that scene is what took me out of the film.
Oh, his wife's face. She's trying not to laugh.
Her face was just, she was pissed.
No, and she's trying not to laugh.
She was being beaten on a regular basis.
I mean, let's be careful that we don't say anything actionable.
I was thinking, he's probably not around to actually sue us at this point. So, I got a 7.
I went a lot lighter in this category. It's all internally consistent. Can I say that this time? The one that I think I'm going to give it a 4, and that's really based on the juxtaposition, because it's like 2 or 3 movies that all make perfect sense if they were on their own. It's really just that like grinding of gears going from the documentary stuff to the STS to the smack talk stuff, which are like 3 distinct feel at tones. All right, memorable.
Before we go on, just to see if I can get you to put another point on here, I'd like to mention they call me Mr. Cool Shoes. Like, come on, that song's pretty WTF. Yet, I thought you'd have more.
We haven't gotten to memorable moments yet, have we? I think the two guys waiting to meet Andre the Giant is the. Is the what the fuck is moment for sure, by quite a margin. Memorable moments, Stan.
Well, there's one thing that's for sure. I will never, ever, ever forget that I've seen this movie.
For good or for bad.
I don't, as much as I may want to get it out of my head and not actually think about it anymore, it's not going to happen. And there's a lot of random things in this movie. Even the title itself, where I could be like, suddenly just pull out and say, I like to hurt people. Just in whatever point of conversation that fits into. So for me, I'm not exactly sure where to go, but I'm going to go right down the middle with a 5.
I'm giving it a 3 in this category because I've physically written out, I like to hurt people, do not watch again out 25 times. And that is my takeaway. Other than that, I am trying my hardest to erase this from the internal data bank banks. Do not want to remember will not remember a week from now.
Go check it out on YouTube, folks.
Sometimes, I mean, if it's that unmemorable, you can watch it 4 or 5 times for the price.
Yeah. And you can just forget immediately afterwards.
Right. You're right back.
I definitely think this is the week, because nothing happens in this movie, despite having, you know, a movie and new scenes and the doc, like nothing happens. And there's, like I say, there's no rustling to, like, there's nothing that's memorable. There's rustling scenes you can barely make out. Like, there's filmed so poorly. The closest thing to something memorable probably is the two managers arguing at the end. But yeah, there's really nothing happens in this thing. That's the big problem with the movie. And yet somehow I found it, you know, oddly charming. But yeah, I think a 3 is probably about right on this.
I had to be reminded of even the best scenes. 2 for me. Crazy concept.
Well, it's wackadoo crazy that you would decide to do this. It's not crazy that you would decide to make a wrestling horror movie. It's not crazy that you would attempt a wrestling documentary because there were too many new scars. But
back then, it, you have to understand, you have to think of it. It's extremely odd to do a wrestling documentary back then that is breaking kayfabe, you know, that is giving you some real stuff. And it isn't all worked. And that's the thing about it that's strange to me from that crazy concept is, some of the documentary stuff is still worked in character, but some isn't. And that's, you just don't get that, especially in that era.
All right, Jack, you've sold me. I'm going to give it a 5.
Oh, to actually score this, I'd actually have to admit somebody had a concept before this movie existed. I don't think that is the case. I think at all times they were just trying to save their own ass. I don't know. I'll give it a 3. It's not your run of the mill thing, but I don't know.
Well, if we're comparing it to some of the movies and the crazy concepts we've had in the past, which are these big outlandish aliens and different things, like, just break it on what it actually is and how crazy that is, you know, and the history behind it that we've given on this podcast shows how crazy an idea this is. I have an 8 on this category.
All right, then. I think it's interesting that I'll give you that it was a crazy concept to make a documentary about wrestling. It was so crazy that it totally failed in the footage set.
Well, keep in mind that wasn't the original actually plan.
There may be a failure point of too crazy where actually stopped making the movie. And
is that the part where it's like Superman going backwards around the Earth? It's just like,
I'm gonna stand this up and say 5. I love that for all of his go heading down the middle of the road, Stan scored this the second highest.
Well, that's because I can't agree with anything, but I can't disagree with anything. So
I respect your right to be Boogaloo. Yeah. All right. That's the end of scoring. Each season we have 6 secret modifiers, and if you're keeping score at home, we got 3 of them right off the top. It gets a -1 for a modifier we're calling lame day shipping. This is not readily available or purchase. I think we had to, it came in a brown wrapper, and you had to go through some.
Well, we had a moment where we actually had a Boogaloo weekend, and we were going to watch this. It didn't play on the DVD player that they had. If you picked up the thing, you might have thought I'd taken the shrink wrap off. There was no shrink wrap. It came like that. it, and when I got it home, it wouldn't play in my DVD player either. Even ripping this thing to get it to a point where we could see it was an incredible amount of work, because it's just some VHS copy. Somebody did some rip off somewhere and managed to give to somebody who started selling it. I don't know what's going on. Yeah. That part was crazy.
I give that a 5.
It does get a -1 for I Thought You Knew Me. The three that Jack brought this, the other three have all given it a 25 or lower. So a -1 for that. It does get a +1 for its obscurity. It does have under 500 votes on IMDb on its ratings. Maybe once our listeners watch it on YouTube and give it a rating, it'll boost.
Share the hell out of this thing, folks. We're giving you something rare as hell.
I don't know if you like this,
you might try and do this again.
Only 395 of you need to give it a rating on IMDb to get it over that mark. Which gives us I forgot to open the octagon. Which gives us a final rating of 46.5 out of 100, which puts it, I'm going to say low.
It's a shame. Couldn't quite get to the 50. That would have been the best.
Not quite. 40, what did I say? 46.5 puts it right between the Big Bet and the Hebrew Hammer.
That works. Really does work there.
I gotta say, well, this movie, even I didn't know what I was getting into, because, like I say, I was 13 when I saw it. That's about 100 years ago. Man, this is a great idea for a season. I just wanted to do this one over and over again. I've come up with so many more movies that would be awesome that I've seen to share with you guys. It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good idea.
No, he said the concept, not that we should do I Like to Hurt People over and over.
No, God, no.
I'm just worried that if
misunderstood there.
No, if I Like to Hurt People was on the list at any given time, I worry about his mental acuity.
You do not want that.
Oh boy. No, we do not. Oh yes. Well, that's the end of I Like to Hurt People. And I know Nick is the happiest person around, where he no longer has to think about it. Now he can think about our next movie, which is The Monolith Monsters. Congratulations, everyone. The Monolith Monsters.
Now, was this one of your movies, Nick?
This was one of my movies. And you know what? Going back and watching it, I forgot how freaking boring it is. I fucking love it.
You're jumping ahead.
Stan's gonna have to edit stuff into
the next episode. I'm selling the sucker. It's boring, but awesome.
Oh, okay. So, anyways, now that we've cleared up that the
well-oiled machine.
Oh yeah. We're pressing onward here. Jim, please tell the folks where to find us.
All right. We are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. And for everything else, visit our podcast sponsors, WeTalkPodcasts.com. And We Talk Podcasts also has a Facebook and a Twitter where you can keep up on as we announce movies, as we post episodes. Also subscribe on iTunes and YouTube. Comment and subscribe and leave a rating on iTunes. All that stuff helps us.
Any place you get your podcast from, where we are everywhere.
All of those places.
Twice.
Yeah. Just get it from everyone. Multiple downloads of each one. Just give them as gifts. I think Christmas is right around the corner. I can't think of any other better present.
Yeah. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Just burn them all to your own CD or VHS, whatever you feel like doing, and put your own images on it, and hey, you're good to go. That's a Christmas gift worth sharing. Okay. Well, as I said, we're moving on to Monolith Monsters. This is season 9. If you show me yours, can you believe it, gentlemen, that we have been doing this 9 seasons already? I mean, 500 episodes almost that we've gone through here. But yeah,
it's catching up to the voice.
Yeah, it's great stuff. We're having a lot of fun, and we're going to keep having a lot of fun. So I think that we should wrap it up. So for Jim and for Jack and for Nick, you know, all those guys, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
Cheer for me, and I like to put my fist in people's face. I get enjoyment out of that. I kind of take it out right here at my home. I don't like this dog that's sitting next to me. Kathy loves the dog, but I don't like the dog. I like to kick the dog if I ever have a chance. But this is the way I am. I'm very self-centered, and I expect a lot from people. We got married, Kathy and I needed to get a job, and I wasn't interested in anything. So I went to Mike Colonis and talked to him, and that's how I started. He helped me get into the profession. Well, I've noticed since I've been coming to the wrestling, especially at Cobo Arena, since going to the arenas and doing what I think is my thing, I've noticed that there's kids from 15 to 25, you know, coming now and cheering me on. And I've went to wrestling matches before, and I've noticed that the ages are like 35, 40, 45, and there's a lot of young people coming now, and I'm glad to see that there is. I like to hurt people. People think that when someone says, well, I like to hurt people, they think they're no good, you know, they're rotten people. But I get enjoyment out of smacking somebody in the face, especially if they smack me. You know, I like that. I really do. When I was wrestling amateur, there was times I wanted to bust somebody right in the mouth, you know, just to hit them, because I don't know, it's this way I am. It's my nature, I guess. And I finally found true me. You know, I like hurting people. I just really enjoy it. I'm good to my family. I mean, when I'm out of the ring, I treat my family good. I've got a little girl. Am I a good person?
Does he have any eating? Yes. he likes to eat once in a while. That's his worst habit, I guess.
My name is Heather Feather. I've been wrestling for 6 years.
Saturday night. On a Saturday night at 8 o'clock at the Cobo Arena in Detroit or the Los Angeles Coliseum, if you could go ahead and guarantee a man's going to get gored to death, you sit there with a complete sellout. Chicken with his legs cut off, well, that's what he's going to do because he realizes that the promoters will pay him for this. And then he'll go into the ring and he'll take advantage of somebody, especially a young fella in professional wrestling, and completely go ahead and destroy his career, ruin his attitude about wrestling. Instead of developing young athletes, well, he's chasing him out of professional wrestling. He's what gives professional wrestling a bad name, is an idiot and a goof like this.
It's a three-ring circus, a Roman arena. The men in the ring are gladiators, and the crowd, the common folk, are getting their chance. Their chance to act against authority figures that they cannot be aggressive towards in their own real lives. Their chance to beat the men around that they feel have been beating them.
Wrestling is an action sport, body contact, and regardless of what the opinion of the general public is supposed to be, violence. And wrestling gives you all three, a lot of violence, a lot of body contact, and of course, a lot of action.
I am not your manager. Tonight, I am going to be in this corner of the real man, the real champion. I'm nervous. I'm nervous. I'm crazy now.
Well,
the
just
champion
calm down.
Is
just
on
calm down.
Chance of fans getting hurt unless they become involved with the wrestlers. My advice to wrestling fans, stay out of the way.
Hey, what's the good? I paid for blood.
The whole family can do together, you know? There's so much junk on TV, and this is live entertainment. It's really something the whole family can do. There's so much.
Wow, what about this has been this far from over?
What are the repercussions of this kind of violence? What is the repercussion of viewing this kind of scene over and over again?
I kind of take it out right here at my home. I don't like this dog just sitting next to me. Kathy loves the dog, but I don't like the dog. I don't like the dog.
You will get your face broken. You will get your eyes torn out. You will see the police tonight.
Now, let me tell you a few things, Creechman and ladies and gentlemen. George Washington never quit. Abraham Lincoln never quit. General Dwight Eisenhower never quit. And the Pilgrims never quit.
Whoever wrestled the Sheik, maybe they have their hands full.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you feel, as I do, I'm completely nauseated by this whole ugly
bad to that sheep for so long, all I can think of is to break his neck.
The sheep's crazy. Break. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Tonight, tonight, I'm going to break his wrist.
The most dangerous wrestler I've ever officiated. Well, there's no question at all. It's got to be the sheep.
He is the most vicious and best wrestler in the wrestling world. Everybody knows that the Noble Sheep is even a scientific wrestler, and he is one of the best. As far as I'm concerned, this is why I manage you.
The Sheik, the Noble Sheik, will be there to meet any of you men that have guts enough to accept the challenge.
The men in the ring, they're gladiators, and the people around are just as they were in the times of Rome, watching the brute force of one human being against another.